Very warm welcome. Let's have a minute or two of shared silence together, and then we'll get the session underway. So we have around 90 minutes together. Very kind of Sangha Live and Faith to invite me to come to speak with you this evening. I am a servant of the Dharma. Sangha Live is the master of the ceremonies there, and the servant listens to the master and, if possible, has the privilege of sharing. The theme is the inner and the outer. With the period of time that we have, I'd like to offer a guided meditation followed by a talk on the theme with some reference to the dana, the donations that support us, and finally any question and answers, encouragement of course with the direct communication as was mentioned to us, or the chat if you prefer. Where to begin? Let's begin with both inner and outer, and then I'll speak about the relationship between the two. Firstly, it is vitally important to remember. The inner does not come before the outer. It's not that we do lots of inner practice and then we are ready for the outer. It is not the world that we live in. It's a world of interactivity between the inner and the outer. And many of you, including moi, is engaged with the inner and outer world. So please do not have the thought, oh, if I meditate more, if I do more retreats, if I, what else, go to India, go to Myanmar, go to Thailand or whatever, do lots more inner, then I will be ready for the outer. It's a view. But the constructions of our daily life and a good reminder from the Buddha, the authority on this, when he uses the word mindfulness, very, very frequently, he says mindfulness, inner and outer. What that means is we bring our awareness, our mindfulness on the daily basis to the outer and see our response to it, engage with it every day, every human being. And we also have this remarkable capacity to bring the same awareness, mindfulness to the inner. Therefore, inner and outer cooperate together without the priority of one over the other, because life is inner and outer. Small point, but an important one to remember. With regard to both, inner to the outer for the moment, the means by which we know the world initially, and each one counts, and to be mindful of, our eyes, our ears, our nose, our tongue, our touch. The five senses are the doorways for the world outside of ourself to come to ourself. I mean, it's stating the blindly obvious, admittedly. But awareness is what is coming through my eyes, what is coming through the ears, what is coming through the nose, smells and the breath, what is coming through the tongue, food and drink, medication, drugs and more, what is coming through the touch. So a human being living in the world has these five primary doorways to receive the world. In that knowledge and understanding of that, what is the relationship you as a human being have with that? And what are the statements which is regularly given to us as a reminder? Indulging, exaggerating in any area in an unhelpful way will be at the cost elsewhere. There'll be a price to pay. So the first question is very simple one. If one's serious about living with clarity and wisdom, perhaps for many of us, the first question to ask is, how much time in a day do I spend on the mobile phone? First question. How much time of the day do I spend reading the news, which is often quite distressing, disturbing, generating suffering, and adds extra weight to our life? If the impressions of that are being absorbed a great deal, it's tiring, it's a weight, the weight of concern, it's not freeing up the being, is there going to be any love left? Is there going to be compassion? And I'm speaking as a person who subscribes to Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, to New York Times, to the Los Angeles, New York Times, New, Los Angeles Times, and one other dreadful newspaper, The Guardian. But my goodness me, from first-hand experience, one needs to be, Christopher, needs to be extraordinarily vigilant. That's strong mindfulness there to recognize when it is skillful to absorb, to receive, and when is enough. Never to underestimate the power of information in excess, the harm it is bringing to us, the paralysis of an engagement with the outer. And therefore there is, for all of us, some reflection to engage in. And honesty, am I spending too much time on social media, which is not supportive, not insightful, and which is affecting the quality of my life? And then when we talk of letting go, Ah, now we're in the, this is what letting go is about. When we talk about not being attached to, this is what we are talking about. And the willingness to minimize that we're not subjected to. We don't feel any dependency on. Gives us the opportunity to find the space. And out of the space will come the clarity, and out of the clarity will come an action, because we're not prisoners into social media. It's a tool for careful use for a short period of time in order to secure a specific piece of knowledge or information to apply. It's not to kill the human spirit. It's not to deaden the mind. It's not to be another issue to get depressed about. It's a real engagement with the world, primarily with the skillful use of these resources. They don't want you to have a skillful. They want to own you. They want to adjust their algorithms so that you go to the advertising more. They want to hold the consciousness. And so freeing up the being, first step, inner and outer, that I would say that would be a first primary area to look at. First step. Some of you may have already made that step. It is already minimal in your life. You don't feel there is an exaggeration in this area. It is a confined space there for other things there. The second area made me smile. One of the concepts which is used quite regularly, beautiful, but sometimes can get misheard, and that is the potency. And I think the guest speaker who unable to be with us because of the health issue has used it there. Deep rest. And there are retreats and courses and teachers who, in a very precious way, are giving emphasis to this deep rest. And the deep factor in this is important. And one person some years ago, speaking to one of the teachers, heard about the course and in the telephone conversation that took place, the person thought, this made me smile, that the title of the course, it was a depressed retreat. Not a deep rest, depressed. The quite opposite there. And in that, the opportunity to cultivate deep rest doesn't necessarily require a retreat, but it requires some other factors. And again, with the invitation in a practical way, is to consider, is there the cultivation in the daily life of deep rest? From minutes to hours, to a day, or whatever. And the areas that I've got in mind with this, one of them is silence. Noble silence. That's the silence which is deeper than just not talking, not being in the company of others. It's the silence which one feels, a little bit like the silence in waking up in the middle of the night. You can feel the silence. It's almost tangible. Feel the quiet of the being, of the immediacy of the world. Can we, in noble silence, find times for that, outdoors in the nature? And what is rather beautiful with noble silence, sounds still come. They are not interrupting the silence, such as the birds and the other sounds there, including people's voices. But in the receptivity to the noble silence, the sounds, let's take the birds as an example, the sound, are passing through the silence. They're not interrupting it. It's a movement from the source, in this case the birds, to the ears, which is in the case you and me, and it just seems to be moving through the silence and embedded in the silence. Then we know, this is what noble silence is. It's inclusive. It is accommodating. So let me speak a little bit, give now a guided meditation with you, and then I'll speak a little bit further about the theme. And I want to speak to you about a film which I've just watched recently, which I'm enthused about, and which weaves in to what we're speaking about, the inner with reduction of things which is too much of, clear and conscious reduction. I gave two examples. And secondly, the cultivation of the noble silence. But first, let's have the sitting time together. And this is a guided meditation. Just sitting, 2 feet firmly on the floor, sitting tall and upright. Experiencing the quiet stillness of the posture of the whole being. Not engaged in any meditation method or technique. And resting in the stillness and resting in the silence. There is a kind of, shall we call it, purity of non-doing. that we know non-doing. Even the movement of our little finger is doing too much. Our stillness gives support to the silence. Our receptivity to the silence gives support to the stillness. The voice is a support, a small reminder of our intimacy with the silence and with the stillness. There's no need for any story, narrative. Nor any indulgence. Therefore, no wasting of energy. Into the movements of the mind. So our energy contributes. Through our interest in deep rest. In the deepening into the silence and into the stillness. we can feel a subtle aliveness. The subtle sensations, vibrations of the whole being. In this deep abiding, in this restfulness. We do not have to engage in intentional, deliberate acts of letting go. Letting go is naturally, organically occurring, owing to our intimacy with the silence and the stillness. Letting go of memories, of plans, of daydreams, of stress, of views. Silence and stillness and receptivity isn't making silence and stillness an ultimate aim. It's generating a receptivity. Fresh insights, to new ways of looking, to an understanding which has never been understood before. through our engagement and action in the world. Therefore, we abide in periods of noble silence, in noble stillness, not for itself, but for what has the opportunity to come through. Different from the known and all too familiar. And we bring as well with it the calm and the clarity. Through our actions in the world. We have a simple word for this calm and clarity to bring into the world, and the word is love. Is a rather pure kind of love. It come from, emerged from deep rest. It is a pure love, insofar as this love is not dependent upon a return. the self is not looking for a confirmation from the other of this kind of love. Liberation means the setting free of love. So it can move freely into this world. So we engage fully with this world. We find renewal. So love can be shared again with this world. So love is the bridge between deep rest and deep service. The noble silence confirms noble communication. So we can contribute and support the best of what our humanity can offer. remaining minute in the noble silence. Hey, thank you everyone for lending an ear. I'll just speak for another 10 minutes or so on the theme. Sometimes, in our quiet moments, they are rather blessed. There can be a kind of surprising receptivity. And some of the important, significant intimations from the being can come rather quietly, not some kind of loud shout. And for that, come quietly, it requires from us a listening into the noble silence. And I mentioned a film, and sometimes, and I'm possibly you've had this experience as well, probably. It was on YouTube. And I typed in French cinema. And then a name came up. Le silence de la mer, the silence of the sea. And the photo showed a German officer in France, and it was curious. And I watched this film for 90 minutes. I'm not sure if I blinked through it. It was a film dedicated, in my view, to noble silence. And without going into the detail too much, the Nazi military occupied France and they would place German officers into the homes of French families. In the rural home of the elderly uncle and his niece, this officer was placed. The uncle and the niece observed noble silence. It was an expression of resistance. The officer was a cultured man, and we witness through this the dynamics of noble silence there, his communications with them, though they neither acknowledged him, and how that evolved. I found it insightful, beautifully presented, and reminder of the power of silence and the power of pairing communication. As you can tell, I recommend it. It jumped into my top five favorite films. And lovely, it's on YouTube. Easy to see. Be meditative to watch. Sometimes, in the world of the inner and outer, the art, I'm taking a film here, cinema, movie, as an example, can touch something which we respond to, and we find ourselves in a remarkable place of interest in a work of art and what it's telling us. And that then, for myself, it triggered reading the original novel, the way it was secretly made available because of the occupation. The book was written in 1941-42. It's a short novel. But it tells us something more. And I use it as an example. Sometimes with the noble silence, it's the voice of resistance with dignity. Sometimes with the communication, it's the voice of love and the skillfulness in finding the words to express something where change is needed or an understanding is needed. And we need expressions of this. What are the times when you and I just need to listen and to be silent? Neither to be angry against, nor to generate division of for and against, and just be in the silence. And there's a certain quiet integrity to this, but equally important, so there isn't any contraction with us in this inner and outer world. What are the times when we truly need to speak? And what are we going to say? And who is going to listen? And what is the essential core statement and the ethic that goes with it? Is there love in the communication? Not self-righteousness. And the power of that goes far deeper than all the confusions and conflicts and difficulties which you and I know plenty about already. So we are finding the voice of the noble silence, sorry, with the silence, because we can find renewal through the silence. But we also can find the voice, the written voice, the spoken voice, the voice which engages, the voice which is sees love as a powerhouse. And bringing those two together is, in my view, the bridge of the inner and outer world. And these teachings and these practices, as said with the guided meditation with you just now, in a way, liberation, that big fancy word with the capital L that often goes with it, is actually more down to earth than the metaphysic. And what I mean is the liberation of love. It's the liberation to be in the silence. It's the liberation of the voice. It's the liberation of the creativity. It's the liberation of the doing, the direct service to people, to creatures, to our natural world. All the teachings essentially are a teachings of liberation. And that liberation finds itself in its expression, in its manifestation. And therefore, as much as we can in our own modest way, we stay dedicated to that exploration. We give the liberation of love, liberation of freeing up of awareness, of engagement, the first priority, so that we, now looking at our relationship and all that we have, what today will contribute to liberation? What will confirm it? What are we free to express? And if we stay true to that, in this teachings, it's called a noble way of life. It always has been. It's always been said. It's been said this evening, and it will be said long after you and I have left this world. The teachings of a noble way of life. And all the other myriad voices that we hear, and some of them are disconcerting, but there are also some genuinely really precious voices. And sometimes they come in mysterious ways. And when I was doing my research on the background to this film, on the courage of the women and men in Paris, in this case, who printed out the paper, the words, I think it's probably about 70 or 80 pages, the novel, bound women who bound it together and others who distributed it to other people, few hundred copies there, and it went especially to many people engaged in the resistance, and it was regarded as the book of the resistance there. The courage and the service and the dedication to communicate something different from what was normally being communicated there. And I felt to myself in the reading about this, the author who had to use a pseudonym, because his life was at risk if he got caught as being the author, that he spent weeks and weeks wondering what would be the title of what has been written. This has also got an important nuance. And then he came up with le silence de la mer, the silence of the sea. And sometimes in life, something is clear and we know it's clear, whatever that may be about. And the reason, he said, was because the sea reveals much of itself, but it also reveals much which we don't know what's going on under the surface of movement and changes and ways and forms and much, much more. And sometimes in the silence of the sea of our humanity, of the ocean of our inner life, there is much going on, and in our silence, it gets the opportunity, and out of that, something can emerge, which is precious. Love the silence. Love it. Love your moments of stillness. Love the opportunity to give service to others, because for the love, not for the reward. Okay. Thank you for lending an ear. We have about 30 minutes together. And I know from the previous times of the privilege of being able to share with you references to the donor, the donations, very sweet what Faith said a little while ago from Sangha Live. But what is important here is the beautiful provision of Sangha Live, making it through this remarkable world of communications that we've had in the last generation, in this form, of putting a whole programs together in which, probably from all the continents, people come together, share together, listen, perhaps some insights and understanding come for us. And it's because few people have said, with their love of the Dharma, love of service, love of the Sangha, let's make this happen. And there, and have sustained it now through the years. And that's an expression of everything was in this talk and sharing and guided meditation with you this evening. It's a confirmation. And the second support as well is the offering of the teacher, the sharing from experience, the sharing from understanding, and the ongoing exploration into the human experience, and how insights and understanding can come to us in different ways. And one was from a film made in France in 2004, now available for some time on the YouTube. And that's where receptivity is. As vast as the world is, as many ways things can come to touch us. Keep your good eyes, ears, mind, heart open, inwardly and outwardly. All right, we have around 20, 25 minutes. I've got the glasses here close at hand. And I read once that it was a person in Italy, I think like the 12th or 13th century, who came up with the idea of glasses. And thanked him. I can see a few people here in front of me with glasses on. I thanked that good man a few times. All right. So I'll go to the chat column there. And again, either as was stated, use the yellow hand if you'd like to have some exchange together, or alternatively, with regard to the chat column. And it can be on the theme or something related in some way or other. I leave it to you. Yeah. I'm just going to bend down and have a sip of the water. Yes, all right. So can you expand on your understanding of love in the Dharma? Happy to. So firstly, the word is metta. It has a three primary uses according to what it's about. So a primary use is love, the power of love. Second primary use, very similar, is loving kindness. This is the use which is primarily used in the Buddhist tradition. But it's only one of the three words. And the third is deep friendship. So love, loving kindness, and deep friendship, metta, is there. So this evening with you, the emphasis, obviously, was on love, but inclusive of deep friendship, inclusive as well on loving kindness. And so sometimes you and I, in our feeling tone in our emotional life. Sometimes the language of friendship, language of kindness, language of love, including romantic love, including love in the form of service to others, including love of the arts, love of creativity, love of the nature. So all of that in these teachings means that metta has these three primary areas, and each one matters. So that's the first point. The second one, with regard to love in the Dharma, there, the Buddha speaks of metta, that means the threefold meaning. And the threefold meaning, incidentally, is not Christopher talking here. It's in the official Pali dictionary. There, although the tradition has repeated, tends to use loving kindness. And one of the powerhouses, once again, with this kind of love that I'm speaking about, when it's not dependent on, shall we call it, ego gratification, getting what I want from giving love, nor is it dependent on the recognition or approval or feedback of others, because love is precious unto itself, so to speak, there. And with this, the Buddha uses the language. He doesn't never says unconditional love. Not possible. But what he does speak of is immeasurable love. Means we do not have to set a limit on it. And some of the great women and men of history who we deeply respect, who have made an enormous contribution to human existence in contemporary generations, going back many, many generations, and of course, included amongst those, the Buddha, and many, many, many others. What's the common feature? Is the love which they expressed for the welfare, well-being, and benefit of others, and stayed true to it regardless of the risk. And that immeasurable love is within our potential. And what's rather beautiful about this with love is it's a confirmation through the clarity of reality. Reality is immeasurable. Just look at the night sky. Just look out over the ocean. Just look at the expanse of the inner life. That and no limits to it. So love, appreciative joy, compassion, equanimity, they are all expressions of something we can't measure. There's no limit to its potential. So even us, you and me, small beings that we are, brief time on earth that there is, finite and measurable as you and I are, can still know a love which has no measurement, which is immeasurable, like the reality. To me, that is something. Just something. Beautiful. Yes, anyone else? One person has put the link to Le Silence de la Mer And of course, it's English subtitles with it. Any other views? The Silence of the Sea is the English title. Any other questions that you may have? Well, I'll continue with the question. Can you expand? Because we're into the immeasurable. So, can you expand on your understanding of love in the Dharma? Sometimes in the rhythms and flows. With the daily life, something touches us, and it brings out of the being a love. In my beauty, to recognize beauty in all the ways that beauty comes, in a way, is a confirmation of love. The arts and appreciation for the arts. It's also a confirmation of the love. The creative sharing of something with the other or others is also a confirmation. And I find that those confirmations are authentic recognition there of the manifestation of the Dharma revealing itself in kindness, revealing itself in deep friendship. And when the Buddha was asked about deep friendship as a sign of metta, his response to it was, he asked the question and then answered, what does it mean, a deep friendship? And his response was not somebody who keeps praising you and flattering you and saying nice things about you or whatever, but it's a person with whom there can be an open, honest sharing together, which may have difficulties in it, but it doesn't have the capacity for either to lose their deep friendship. That there is a certain unshakability with metta, deep friendship. And I once asked my Ajahn Buddhadasa, primary teacher of mine in Thailand, in this area, and he made a comment to me which has kind of stayed with me over the years. And it's a little bit in contrast to what some of us have learned. What we have learned, it's in the tradition, and that is, there are methods and techniques to develop metta, And I'm sure many of you, including moi, have practiced them, have benefited from them. And even taught them, for those of us who teach or run a class or whatever it might be. And Buddhadasa said to me, in 10,000 discourses of the Buddha, you won't find any meditation, technique, instruction, language to develop metta. Wow. And that's a contrast to the tradition. Yeah. Tradition's got its history and its authority, but the Buddha hasn't spoken about metta in the way that you and I do, in terms of, you know, you sit and then you develop metta, let's say, for oneself, and then expands it out to friends and family, and then to strangers and to all beings. And we can't find it. So the dialogue went on with Ajahn Buddhadasa. And what emerged out of it was, he said, metta is the outcome of understanding. Metta is the outcome, the fancy word, wisdom. And when he was asked, what do the wise, and it means the liberated, those who have seen through the problems of life, or most of them, if they're stream enter, most of them there, he was asked, what do the wise all have in common? What do the clear-minded all have in common? And he said, anukadampa, empathy. Empathy. Which is an expression of love. An expression of deep friendship. And so, when we listen, what I found helpful about that particular conversation, it reminded me that, like yourselves, in the interest of what other people have to say, including those with authority in any particular field, if the wisdom is there with the authority, including sometimes some criticism and some concern, but if one picks up the empathy, it's a reminder that there is wisdom there. Not the empathy which takes sides. That's a prejudice. Empathy can't take sides. It's immeasurable. And so when you and I are reading, watching YouTube, or listening to another on a podcast or in the whatever, wisdom and empathy. Helpful reminder. And sometimes we find ourselves, I find myself at times, I listen to another and they might be talking about the love of their country and wanting to protect their country. It might be politics, or it might be religion, or a group, or whatever. And sometimes we get the opportunity to maybe ask a question. And sometimes I've got the opportunity to ask the question, do you feel the same empathy for others in other groups with the same concerns? Partly because I'm curious Is the empathy immeasurable, or is it confined? Major question, and in this world, a really important one. Any other, any responses, any questions anywhere? How am I doing? Oh, 5 or 6 minutes. I promised faithfully, duty calls. In 5 minutes, I said, I promise I will be back there to remind them what they know already. It's 9:30. It's the evening time for, you know, most of you know this already. Evening time for the hot drink. Good rest, good sleep. See you tomorrow. So, in 5 minutes, au revoir. Okay, there is a hand up from Karen. Yes, Karen.
Hello, forgive me not having my camera on. It doesn't.
That's all right, no problem.
It interferes with my signal. I'm so sorry. I don't have a great signal. Thank you so much for this evening and for stepping in at a short notice. I noticed that someone else asked a question in the chat, which I had also wanted to ask, which was, could you say a little bit more about why you said unconditional love is not possible?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
I thought someone might ask that. As soon as I put the word out, oh, I'm going to get asked about this. All right. This is the Dharma voice here. Even more, Christopher's Dharma voice, others may disagree. For love to emerge, it requires conditions. One condition is being alive. One condition is consciousness. One condition is mind and body are functioning in some degree, hopefully, of harmony. Love can't, if love was unconditional, it would not require any conditions. It would mean there'd be love in nothing. Love is a response to life from emerging out of the formation of life. And it's not easy, but it's a challenge to us there to recognize what are the supportive conditions for love, calmness, clarity, curiosity, interest, awareness, presence, empathy, mutual understanding, blah, 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 blah. Many, many factors contribute to that. And if we didn't need the conditions for that, and there was such a reality as unconditional love, love could never, ever, ever be ever affected in any way possible by anything, because it's unconditional. Well, I've lived on this earth 81 years. I've had the privilege, like some of you, of meeting some of the most beautiful human beings on this earth. Direct live conversations with them. I haven't yet met a person who could put hand on heart and saying all the time, I'm living in unconditional love. That's the view. If you meet anybody anywhere, I don't fly very much these days. I'm trying to minimize it. But my goodness me, I'll be there like a rocket. Just send me their name and their address. And the Buddha said on this, how can we know someone who lives with wisdom, with metta? As there. Not perfect, but how can we know someone? Because sometimes we're rather impressionable when we meet a person for the first time, whoever the person may be, let's say, could be a guru, a spiritual teacher, or a wonderful psychologist, whoever, we're a bit impressionable. And he said there are two things to know. This practical and down to earth and worth remembering. One, you have to know this person a long time. Secondly, how does this person handle a difficult situation? Whether it's personal or one which is out there in front of them, so to speak. These two points, know the person a long time, through different situations and environments, whatever, and know how do they handle when things are tough, whatever that might be about. Then we can have a sense of the wisdom, their clarity, their love, or whatever. Whatever is really important, which we wish to see in the other. Good teaching. Very good advice. All right. I've got 2 minutes with you. I'm going to finish. And keep to the commitment, the ethic of being over there in the other room. Let's have a quiet minute together. And thank you very, very much for giving me the opportunity to spend some time with you. To the lovely Sangha Live team, to your kindness with the donations, which really help these lovely initiatives to keep going and so they can be offered with love and with an invitation to support. Okay, quiet minute together. May all beings live with love. May all beings live with deep friendship and loving kindness. May all beings know the wisdom which is liberating. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Faith. Thank you all. Namaste.